Good morning. I'm not using PowerPoint. I'm going to be using word of mouth. It's an old-fashioned technology, but still a good one. I found it very interesting to observe the difference between the tone and feel of the discussion yesterday and today. Yesterday was all about the exciting world of innovation being delivered to us by the private sector, by competition, and delivering benefits to the consumer. Today, what we're hearing about is why there's a need for public sector involvement, public sector leadership, why it's difficult to make innovation in some areas happen. So the question arises, why the difference? What explains that? Well, I think it's helpful as we think about that to keep in mind the distinction between proprietary and coordinated or system-wide innovation. Proprietary innovation is the stuff we heard about yesterday. It's things like an improvement in payment card technology, a new app to go on your mobile phone, maybe a new interface that an individual bank might provide to its customers. That's the proprietary sphere. The cooperative sphere, which is more what we're talking about today, is things that can only be done by collective action by the participants in a network. And examples of that might be the adoption of a new messaging standard for interbank payments, or a coordinated move to faster payment times along the lines we heard about today in relation to the UK's faster payments service. The difference between those two spheres lies in who is able to capture the benefits of the innovation. In the proprietary sphere, the benefits can be captured by the innovator to gain a competitive advantage, which can then be passed on to customers, and so they have plenty of incentive to innovate. But in the cooperative sphere, it's much more difficult to achieve. Payment service providers are very good then at innovating in the proprietary space because they have an incentive to do so. As I think about the difficulties of making cooperation work in that second area, I can think of two distinct reasons why these things are difficult to achieve. One is the problem that I've already alluded to of capturing benefits so as to provide a return to the innovator. To give a concrete historical example, the example's already been mentioned yesterday of speeding up check clearing. Other things equal, faster check clearing is a benefit, but it can only be achieved collectively, and there's no competitive advantage gained by any individual participant in making that happen. Given that it's going to be costly to take the action to achieve that innovation, the incentives to agree on it are not particularly strong. To make the example more up to date, think of the incentives to deliver faster or real-time retail payments, which were discussed in the earlier session today. Putting that in place obviously will involve cost, particularly it'll involve investment by the people that have to deliver those services, but the incentive to agree on it is not particularly strong when we consider that there's no proprietary benefit to be gained by individual participants in delivering it, and in fact delivering that service may cannibalise existing proprietary systems which do provide profits to the participants. Now this particular problem is going to exist, it's not a problem of asymmetries of incentives among the participants, because even if all participants had exactly the same incentives, the same cost structures, the same revenue incentives, there's going to be an incentive, there's going to be a tendency to underinvest in innovation in that kind of cooperative venture. But that also brings me on to a second reason why it's difficult to make cooperation stick, and that is that the participants in a network do not have equal incentives to agree on cooperative solutions. They have different business models, different customer bases, different cost structures, different sizes, and also very importantly, they have different investment cycles. So a bank that has just invested a lot of money in renovating its technology structure may be quite reluctant to agree to participate in a cooperative innovation, which would require a further round of investment, whereas a different bank at a different stage of its investment cycle might feel that now is exactly the time when it would like to participate in that kind of collective action. All of these things then make it hard to get cooperative action to work in the payment space and tend to lead to a slower pace of innovation than would be socially efficient. I think this problem is inherent in any network that doesn't find a way of operating as a kind of proprietary unit in the way that, for example, a card payments network can do. So, for the payment system as a whole, we need coordination mechanisms to make sure that efficient collective innovation can happen. What sorts of mechanisms might we be talking about? Well, I think that really there are two kinds that we can consider. One is a kind of voluntary cooperation that can take place through industry bodies, and I think there's a very important place for that, particularly where there are not strong competing proprietary interests at stake. And examples of this might be the routine coordinated upgrading of technical standards in a payments network. But where there are significantly conflicting incentives and it's harder to reach agreement, then it may need a regulator to take a leadership role. In Australia, the payments regulator is the central bank, the Reserve Bank of Australia. Regulatory decisions are made by the Reserve Bank Payment System Board. We have a mandate to promote stability and efficiency, which I think we can view as including the efficient resolution of the coordination problems that I've just described. And we have significant powers that can be directed to that end. For these reasons, the Reserve Bank of Australia has been increasing its focus on these coordination issues in recent times. You may be aware that we announced in July 2010 a strategic review of innovation in the payment system in Australia, and we're now in the finishing stages of completing that review. We've held two rounds of extensive consultation with service providers and also with payment system users to bring that review to a conclusion. Broadly speaking, the review has focused on three questions, which I can sum up by three key words, which are gaps, governance, and hubs. Let me say a little bit about each of those. First of all, gaps, where the question is, are there potential innovations that would be in the public interest that are not happening because of coordination failures? Responses to our coordination process suggest that there might be, and particularly the potential gaps that have been highlighted to us have been four. They are faster or real-time payments at the retail level, what we've been talking about earlier today. Greater availability of payment systems outside normal banking hours, which is closely related to that first one. Improved capacity to send information with payments, and greater ease of addressing payments. Those last two, I think, are closely related to the question of what can be the more modern replacement of the cheque, because when we think of why cheques persist and what they're good at, cheques are very good at providing a means for addressing payments when you don't know much about the person that you're making the payment to, and they're very good as a practical means for attaching information to a payment, because all you need to do is staple an invoice to a cheque and it's all bundled together. But we don't yet have a comparatively easy mechanism for achieving those things in electronic payments. Now, obviously, it's not costless to deliver these things that are identified as gaps. And so any coordinated decision process that's thinking about whether to deliver these things needs to think about both the cost and benefits of doing so. That means that we need to also think about what is the governance process that is going to make those decisions. How do we have a process that assesses, in some wider social sense, the net costs and benefits of making innovations that are truly cooperative in nature? In Australia, the sorts of questions we're asking, because we have a payment system board with the mandate that I described for efficiency and stability, we're asking questions like, should the payment system board be setting an objective for introduction of real-time retail payments by a particular time deadline? How would it determine what the appropriate time frame is? Should it perhaps delegate the technical details of how to achieve implementation to an industry body with the appropriate technical expertise? All of that would amount to a governance model where you have high-level objectives being set by a regulator with a public interest mandate, and then efficient means of implementation being determined by an industry body with technical expertise. The third area that we are thinking about, I talked about gaps and governance, is the question of hubs, which is specifically the question of whether there needs to be, in the Australian case, a greater use of centralised architecture to deliver on these coordinated solutions for clearing and settlement in retail payments. This is an issue in Australia because much of our payment system is built around bilateral links between institutions. Arguments can be made in favour of hubs on the basis that they may be more efficient than bilateral networks and also may be more conducive to innovations that can piggyback onto the existence of the hub-based network. But those considerations need to be balanced against the cost of the investment, and there are also questions of if there's going to be a clearing and settlement hub for retail payments, who should build it? Is it a job for the public sector, or should the private sector do so? These are questions that we're currently considering as part of the innovation review that I mentioned earlier, and all of these things need to be subjected to some kind of coordinated answer. That's the central point that I'm making today. Whether the eventual decision is for or against, there needs to be a coordinated decision-making process that can decide on the net public cost-benefit calculation. So to sum up very briefly, the points that I've made are that coordination failures can be an obstacle to innovation in this core payments area that I've been talking about today. That problem, I think, is inherent in the nature of payments networks. It's very hard to design governance structures that make appropriate provision for coordination while still allowing for normal competition to occur. This is a point that a number of speakers have made today. Competition is obviously very important, but there needs to be some way of delineating what's the coordination space, what's the competition space, and making sure that appropriate decision making occurs within the coordination space. Who's going to play that leadership role? Well, in some ways, central banks, I suggest, have a natural leadership role for a couple of reasons. One is that they already act as a hub in some ways for payment systems. At a minimum, central banks provide the central settlement facility by which banks can settle interbank payments, which is really at the core of payment systems from bank to bank and therefore indirectly from customer to customer. So central banks are already a natural hub in that sense. And in some cases, certainly in Australia's case, the central bank is also the regulator with responsibility for payment system efficiency and stability and with powers to achieve those goals. Final point that I want to make is that in carrying out any leadership role in this area, it's very important, if central banks are going to do it, to consult with industry. The advantage that central banks have is that they can fill a coordination gap because they are in a position to take a public interest viewpoint. But we also need to be able to make use of the technical expertise that only resides in the payments industry and with the participants. And so that means that we need to be able to combine both the public interest perspective and also the expertise of industry in determining the most efficient means of delivery. Thanks very much.